Monster Man, Episode 223, Mold, Comma, Russet, and Mongrel Man. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a little unusual. I recorded this episode earlier, but there was a technical problem and I lost the file. What that means is that I'm recording this after having returned from Grogmeet, the annual gathering of the fans of the Grognard Files podcast. I've been playing games all weekend and spending time with great people. I got a chance to meet a lot of listeners, which is really nice. But the downside is that, as you can hear, my voice has been suffering. So if I sound a little hoarse or a little distracted, that is why. I'm also there doing some construction work outside my window. I should be able to edit the background noise out, but if you hear some kind of rattling or clanking, it's the machines. Anyway, today's monsters are the Mold, Russet, and the Mongrel Man. Let's begin with the Mold, Russet. This is another fungal monster. A lot of fungal monsters in D&D, which makes sense for a game that takes place in dank underground caverns a lot, I suppose. It emits poisonous spores, and it has a relationship with another monster from this book, the Vegipygmy, which of course we haven't got to yet. Which is weird because apparently Vegipygmies aren't vegetable at all, they're fungoid, but never mind. So the Mold, Russet grows in underground places, and it emits these spores which will poison you. And if you die, the mold will colonize your body, and then after a certain amount of time, it'll sort of... It's not that it reanimates your body as such, but that it takes the pattern from it or something, and the mold will be able to walk around as a Vegipygmy, a humanoid fungal creature. So what this means is that we have like a basically two-tier encounter structure, in that you're going to run into the Vegipygmies, and maybe you can, you know, kill all the ones that are attacking the village or whatever, but as long as the mold, Russet remains unharmed, it'll always be able to produce more. So you start out with the fight of the Vegipygmies, then you learn how they're created, then you go to wherever the mold, Russet is growing, and you destroy it. And there are pretty detailed rules given here for how you can damage it. I do think that the animation of the Vegipygmy by the mold colonizing a corpse is really good and frightening image. I think that's something that nobody likes to have happen to their dead characters, and it's suitably grotesque. I think one of the reasons that the mold, Russet maybe hasn't had an enormous, you know, and the Vegipygmy haven't had an enormous amount of traction is that this is also a gimmick that a much more popular fungal monster can do. In a couple of episodes, we're going to run into Myconids, and Myconids can use their animation spores to do something similar. So this is a good idea, but it is a good idea that's slightly redundant with another creature that's actually quite close to this in the book, but not completely redundant, and I do like the way in which the relationship between these two creatures essentially implies a structure to the way that you're going to interact with them. I mean, it doesn't take very much to turn the mere existence of the Mold, Russet, and the Vegipygmy into a fun little mini-encounter. Next up, we have the Mongrel Men. These are kind of an odd monster. When I looked at the illustration by Jim Holloway, I thought that what I was dealing with was a sort of Island of Dr. Moreau type of creature, right? That is like almost like a Frankenstein stitched together from different types of being. But apparently that's not the case. Mongrel men are hybrids. It's sort of a catch-all term for everything that doesn't fall into the neat categories of half-elves, half-orcs, and so on. So it says that mongrel men may have among their ancestry possibly the blood of humans, orcs, gnolls, ogres, dwarves, hobgoblins, bugbears, elves, bullywugs, and other. And this feels a little weird. The idea of half-elves and half-orcs, we'll talk about half-elves more in a future episode, but essentially these are there to, you know, to express certain ideas about the nature of humanity, right? If you're a half-elf, the idea is that you're slightly on the outside of this society that you perceive as being above you, but the one that you perceive as being quote-unquote below you also has lessons to teach you and also might not ever fully accept you. An example of a character who we can think of as half-elven in some ways would be someone like Mr. Spock, whereas being a half-orc is about having this kind of shameful heritage that is also a source of your power. Again, this is stipulating a lot of kind of racial stereotyping inherent to these ideas. But you can imagine, you know, an elven wanderer who loved a human maid so much that he married her and they had a half-elven child. You can imagine two tribes of humans and elves that live so close to each other that intermarriage between them is common. And if you squint a little bit, you can try to imagine the origin of half-orcish communities. That isn't completely horrible. But I'm trying to envision as best I can the situation in which a gnoll falls in love with a bullywug. Now, because they don't fit into any of the kind of recognizable categories, mongrel men live on the outskirts of other communities. They live in ruins and caves. They live in the kinds of abandoned places that adventurers are likely to be exploring. And they make their living basically by thieving. They have some stealth and mimicry skills that make them ideal kind of robbers. And, I don't think we're meant to feel sympathetic for them, but that's kind of how they come off. Through no fault of their own, they are outcasts from a wider society who are forced to survive by turning to a life of crime. It also says they're lawful neutral, which is real weird. You wouldn't think of people who were lawful neutral as being thieves and pickpockets. So presumably they have a kind of thieves code, they live in a sort of rookery, they've got their own rigid set of rules. It just feels a little weird. I think thinking about the mongrel men too hard exposes thinking about kind of the D&D implied settings approach to both culture and genetics, and I don't think that either of those things really bear very detailed scrutiny, both in terms of their, quote, scientific accuracy, unquote, and also in terms of the underlying attitudes behind their approach to, you know, species as a kind of substitute for culture. So for me, I much prefer the idea that the mongrel men are the result of genetic experimentation, or even like surgical experimentation, like in the island of Dr. Moreau. We talked before about the idea that certain blends of animal monsters, you know, your Perritons and your what have you, maybe not Perritons, but your, you know, all these things that have the head of a bear but the body of a snake or whatever, could be the result of some kind of mad scientist experiment, and if that mad scientist then turned their attention to sentient creatures, you'd get something like the mongrel men. This would also help explain why there are communities of them. I mean, it seems so unlikely that, you know, over here we have a half-dwarf, half-gnoll, and over here we have a half-bugbear, half-bullywug, and over here we have, you know, someone who's part troglodyte, part kuotoa, or something, and there are so many of these mixtures, not only that, like, are viable, but that they can congregate into large enough communities that there's a name for them. You know, they're not unique freaks. So I think if you just have them coming from a single source, it solves that problem as well, that it seems weird that every one of these creatures would be reacted to in the same way. So instead, we can just say, well, no, actually, they're all part of one community that escaped from this mad wizard who wants to, you know, who's constantly experimenting to create, you know, the perfect super soldier or whatever. This was actually a feature of my D&D campaign. My argument was that, like, half-orcs and half-elves were not, you know, every half-elf was not the individual product of a relationship between a human and an elf, but that at some time in the distant past, elven blood mages had attempted to hybridize humans and elves to produce someone who had the necessary elven something to use elven magic, but, you know, would reproduce and mature quickly, like a human did. Or similarly, that they had tried to create a soldier species by, you know, hybridizing humans and orcs so that they could produce something that was as strong as an orc, but as intelligent and disciplined as a human. And in fact, they had abandoned the half-orc project once they invented hobgoblins. Because it's weird that there are, like, half-orcish communities. You know, they're not individual outcasts. Again, it's weird to be able to make kind of cultural and personal generalizations about half-orcs unless there are half-orcish communities, and therefore I thought it just makes more sense that a half-orc is typically the child of two half-orcs rather than the child of a human and an orc. Anyway, that's a digression about my campaign. I think the mongrel men are great. I think they're, you know, ragged outcast thing, the sort of like the mutant race in the Mighty Boosh, you know, they live on the fringes of society and no one wants anything to do with them. They're kind of staggering. They're sort of pitiful creatures, but also surprisingly good. They can actually make good allies. I think there's a lot to be said for them, but I think their explanation for why they exist at present doesn't really hold up, and I would turn them into the products of some kind of Dr. Moreau experiment. All right, that is about all the monsters that we have time for today. Our next episode is going to be a special episode, and then after that, we're going to return to Monster Manual 2 with a look at the Moondog and the Muck Dweller. So please join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.